Hello and happy Sunday. This is Trevor reading you the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, July 26, 2020. Let's take a quick look at the weather today. Things are actually pretty cool today. We can expect showers and a heavier thunderstorm perhaps later in the afternoon. Winds 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 85. Tonight it will be cooler, a thunderstorm in spots early on, just calm 48 mile per hour winds, and a low of 61 degrees. Monday be mostly sunny and nice. How about that? High of 85, low of 62. Tuesday it'll be partly sunny, nice in the afternoon. Winds from about 7 to 14 miles per hour, and looking at a high of 86 and a low of 66. On Wednesday it'll be sun through high clouds, high of 85, low of 65. And then on Thursday, maybe mostly cloudy, a thunderstorm in some spots, high of 82, low of 61. So let's look at the front page of today's paper, and we got lots of different things to read. So let's look at the main spread, which has a picture of, looks like a nurse kind of speaking with someone in a car about the Test Iowa site at Floyd Valley Healthcare in Lamars, Iowa. The main headline is Virus Subsides in Area. Subheadline, COVID Trend Rise Across State, but Not in Northwest Iowa. From Sioux City. After watching COVID-19 cases climb steadily for weeks, health officials breathed a collective sigh of relief in June. Throughout May and June, Iowa's 14-day rolling total of active cases declined from a high of 7,342 active statewide cases on May 6. The number dipped slightly under 4,000 by mid-June, but in recent weeks, highly populated counties such as Polk, Johnson, Webster, Cerro Gordo, Dubuque, and Lynn have fueled an increase in infection rates, pushing Iowa's totals back above 6,000 and causing renewed alerts that the coronavirus pandemic was far from over. Yet, Iowa Department of Public Health data tracks COVID-19 in each of Iowa's 99 counties shows that the rate of new cases dropping throughout much of this corner of the state, while the state's overall graph showing total active cases has turned upwards, for much of July numbers have gone in the opposite direction across most of Siouxland. The overall number of cases continues to climb, of course, but telling figures such as the number of new cases, the number of currently active cases, and the percentage of tests that come back positive have declined. Most of those numbers have dropped, while the number of tests being done has remained steady. It's an encouraging trend, health officials said, but it could be better. After seeing a high of 667 new cases the week of May 3rd, Woodbury County's total had dropped to 56 new cases for the week of June 21st. It was at 112 for the week of July 12. Overall, Woodbury County has had 3,519 total cases and 47 deaths. Siouxland District Health Department Director Kevin Green pointed out that the number of people tested per week has remained in the 1,000 to 1,600 range, and the rate of positive tests have been at 6 to 8% the past 5 weeks, down from 30% that was seen in early May. Hovering at the same level is a positive, he said, but if conditions were truly improving, the numbers would be continuing to drop. Quote, it's a relief that it's not at least growing, Green said. Quote, right now, it would be nice to see our numbers go down. With 1,771 total cases as of Friday evening, Buena Vista has the highest per capita rate of cases in Iowa. Since May 27th, when it reported 649 new cases on that day alone, the numbers have been dropping. On June 5th, the county had 1,105 active cases, a large total attributed, in part, to the testing of workers at Tyson Meat Plants in Storm Lake and the opening of a Test Iowa drive-through testing site. On June 2nd, Tyson announced that 591 of the 2,300 workers at its Storm Lake pork plant had tested positive for the virus. Because Buena Vista County peaked later than most counties, residents may have believed that the virus wasn't going to be that bad there. Pam Bogue, Buena Vista County Public Health and Home Care Administrator said she too was hopeful that Buena Vista would avoid the big spike. Quote, once we hit those big numbers, people in the community took it seriously and began taking more of those precautions, such as wearing masks, washing their hands frequently, and avoiding large crowds, Bogue said. The number of active COVID-19 cases dropped to 50 by July 1st. It stood at 28 on Friday. There have been 12 COVID-related deaths. Bogue said it has helped that retailers such as Walmart and Walgreens now require customers to wear masks, a measure researchers say helps slow the virus's spread. Bogue is cautiously optimistic that the virus is under control in Buena Vista County. The Test Iowa site is still doing about 150 tests a day, but the number of new cases reported has been as low as one or two a day in recent weeks. Tyson spokesman Gary Mickelson said the number of active COVID-19 cases among Tyson workers has also dropped significantly in the past month at its plants in Storm Lake and Dakota City, Nebraska, where nearly 800 out of the beef plant's 4,500 employees and contractors had tested positive as of late May. Mickelson said the company continues to provide on-site testing for workers at both locations. By Memorial Day weekend, Iowa restaurants, bars, and most businesses were allowed to reopen after the state had ordered them closed in late March to slow the spread of the virus. Health officials anticipated a possible uptake of COVID-19 cases after people began leaving the isolation of their homes to go out to eat or shop. That increase never really happened. Grimes said some people may still be wary of going out and that may be keeping the spread down, but he sees more and more people out and about. People are more mobile and going out for more things, he said. I don't know if people in Woodbury County are more in tune with what needs to be done. That seems to be the case in Dickinson County, where Iowa's Great Lakes attract visitors from throughout the region. About 2 weeks after Memorial Day, a traditional kickoff to the summer vacation season, the country saw a spike in cases. By June 20, the county had more than 150 daily active cases, many of them young adults in the 20 to 30 age range who were going to the many bars and restaurants in the lakes area. But since then, the number has dropped to 51 active cases through July 21st, according to the most recent report from Lakes Regional Healthcare in Spirit Lake. The county has had 352 total cases and 4 deaths. Jennifer Gustafson, Lakes Regional Healthcare Vice President of Marketing, said officials have yet to see any spike in the wake of the July 4 weekend, typically the biggest weekend of the summer. Quote, we're probably more in a holding your breath situation, Gustafson said. During the June peak, health officials renewed their public campaigns about the importance of disinfecting businesses, wearing masks, and maintaining social distancing. Gustafson said the message seems to have taken hold. Quote, I think people are being better with that, she said. I think our business owners are really taking it seriously. A White House Coronavirus Task Force document made public earlier this month included Sioux and Osceola counties among 5 in Iowa referred to as, quote, red zones, with new cases rising above 100 per 100,000 population and positive new test results above 10%. It recommended that communities in red zones close bars and gyms, limit social gatherings to 10 or fewer people, and have all businesses require masks and practice social distancing. Those numbers may have been misleading, especially with a sparsely populated county such as Osceola, where an increase of just a handful of new cases can cause a large leap in cases per capita. On June 26, there were 0 active cases in Osceola County, according to state data. That number reached a high of 19 on July 11th and has since retreated to 8 as of Friday. The most new cases reported on any day in the county is 4, and it has had 73 total positive cases. The positive test rate remains slightly above 10%. Sioux County, with a larger population than Osceola County, has also seen a steady decline in its 14-day rolling active case number from a high of 91 on July 1st to 52 as of Friday. The county has reported 553 total cases and 1 death, and its positive test rate is still elevated at 15%. In that same White House report, Woodbury and Plymouth counties were among 42 counties in what it called, quote, yellow zones, with numbers slightly lower than those in the red zones. Like other area counties, Plymouth has seen its numbers drop rather than rise in recent weeks. After a peak of 99 active cases on July 1st, Plymouth County stood at 45 on Friday and has had 404 total cases and 6 deaths. Numbers there could begin to climb again since a test Iowa site opened in Lamar's on Monday. Plymouth County has seen some flattening on overall positive cases since the local test Iowa sites have closed. We felt it was beneficial for our communities to offer local testing again. We expect to see an increase in the numbers again with more testing being done, said Tara Geddes, manager at Floyd Valley Community Health Care in Lamar's. Numbers have risen this month in Lyon County. The county has had only 84 total COVID-19 cases, but after having just 8 active cases on July 1st, that number has risen to 30 as of Friday. Across the Missouri River from Sioux City, Dakota County has seen its numbers decline since the outbreak at the Tyson plant. Despite ranking 17th in population among Nebraska's 93 counties, Dakota County at one time had the second highest number of cases in the state. As of Friday, it still ranked third behind Douglas and Lancaster counties, home to Omaha and Lincoln, respectively. But during the past 14 days, Dakota County has recorded just 31 new positive cases, ranking 10th in the state, and has had 1,850 cases and 41 deaths. Quote, we're happily seeing some decrease in the numbers and hope that continues, said Natasha Richardson, Dakota County Health Department Director. Well, a lot of the people and businesses have been very responsive and are doing the things they need to do to be safe. Case numbers may be holding steady or declining across Siouxland, but health officials caution residents not to throw caution to the wind. Quote, we're not out of the woods yet, Green said. The wrong set of people in the wrong place could cause a dramatic increase. It's hard to say what kind of effect next month's reopening of schools and colleges will have, Bogue said, because most schools are still finalizing their plans on how to teach kids this fall during the pandemic. Quote, they're all planning differently, she said. A key to keeping those chart numbers dropping, she said, is continuing to follow the guidelines that have been recommended throughout the pandemic. Wear a mask covering the nose and mouth in public. Wash hands frequently. Avoid large gatherings. Practice social distancing and stay home if you don't feel well. Quote, we still need to do all those simple things we've been talking about for months. All right, returning back to the front page. Headline, Steve King defends Confederate symbols. Subheadline, Iowa congressman also derides Black Lives Matter. From Wall Lake, Iowa. On the heels of a June primary election loss that likely ended his lengthy career in the United States House of Representatives, Representative Steve King has stepped up his advocacy for keeping Confederate symbols in the public sphere. The outspoken Iowa 4th District Congressman has also repeatedly denounced the Black Lives Matter movement, which was rekindled across the country in the aftermath of a video showing a Minneapolis police officer killing an unarmed George Floyd in May. King, a conservative Republican, has honed a national reputation for a series of incendiary comments on race and immigration during his 9 terms representing a GOP-friendly district in western Iowa. Floyd's death has sparked widespread protests calling for a series of police reforms, as well as the removal of public symbols that pay tribute to the Confederacy. Protesters have vandalized or torn down a series of statues and memorials to Confederate soldiers in general. Black Lives Matter and other groups have also spoken out against the Stars and Bars, a flag some Confederate troops carried into battle during the Civil War, arguing it has long been a symbol of racism and bigotry. Until a few years ago, King kept a small Confederate flag on his desk in his office in Washington. In the week since his primary loss to State Senator Randy Feenstra, as protests against Confederate symbols have grown, King has stepped up his defense of the flag. Quote, if you believe the Confederate flag is and always was the symbol of slavery, show me, King wrote in a July 11th tweet. Google slavery and click images. I see Old Glory at the bottom of the last page, but not a glimpse of the Stars and Bars. He linked to a page that showed up in a search, which showed dozens of black and white photos of black slaves from the 1800s. Another tweet that same day, King wrote, "If you don't believe the Confederate flag is and has long been a symbol of Southern pride, Google Southern pride. Once you get past the barbecue grills, almost all the rest are stars and bars. Make me want to put some ribs on my grill." That tweet linked to photos of numerous stars and bars flags. On Thursday, the Democratic-controlled House voted to remove Confederate statues from the Capitol. It's not clear if the U.S. Senate will take up the measure. Some removals have taken place nationwide. On July 1st, the mayor of Richmond, Virginia, the one-time capital of the Confederacy, ordered the immediate removal of all Confederate statues on city property. For King, such steps are misguided, as he has tweeted since mid-June that Black Lives Matter, with the shorthand of BLM, is off the mark with its actions. On June 10th, King tweeted a post by Candace Owens, who wrote, quote, "There are millions of black people in America who know hashtag Black Lives Matter is a terrorist group funded by white Democrats. Educated black Americans want absolutely nothing to do with them, and we will never, ever take the knee," end quote. In a Twitter post last week, King posted linked to a Reuters story that highlighted President Trump's position that the Confederate flag is a proud symbol of the U.S. South and denounced Black Lives Matter and Antifa, or anti-fascists, a political movement comprised of autonomous groups affiliated by their militant opposition to fascism. Quote, "The real rebels are hashtag Antifa and hashtag BLM. My bet is at real Donald Trump didn't have to Google Southern pride and click images to confirm his confident and accurate statement," King said in his tweet. On June 19th, King wrote a column on the subject of Juneteenth. He tweeted, quote, "Today is Juneteenth, the day the last slaves were freed by Union troops at Galveston in 1865. Let us reserve forever this day to celebrate our civil rights accomplishments for all whom God created equal." Following that, King criticized a statue of Vladimir Lenin that had been unveiled in Germany at the same time Confederate monuments were being toppled by Americans, including one honoring Confederate President Jefferson Davis in June. Several Twitter users have pushed back on King's post defending Confederate symbols. One man wrote, quote, "The Confederacy committed treason," all capital letters, "against the United States of America. No symbols of that treason," again, in capitalized, "flag, whether they be flags, statues, memorabilia, etc., should be on public lands or in public venues. Those who support that treason should be shunned, ostracized, and kicked out of office." In a journal interview in March 2017, King said he removed Confederate flag from the desk of his Capitol Hill office in the aftermath of the fall 2016 shooting deaths of two Des Moines area police officers by a man with ties to the controversial banner. King pointed out he voluntarily removed the flag, not, quote, "not because anyone demanded or requested that it come down." Last year, King found himself again in hot water on a racially charged issue after his quotes in a New York Times story questioned when terms like, quote, "white supremacist" and "white national," quote, when they became offensive. In the aftermath of national uproar over the comments, GOP House leader stripped King of all his committee assignments. His loss of clout in Congress emerged as a key issue in the June primary campaign in which Feenstra and three other challengers sought to oust King. Feenstra beat King by nearly 10 points in the sprawling 4th District, which covers 39 counties in northwest and north central Iowa. Feenstra now squares off against Democratic candidate J.D. Scholten of Sioux City in the November general election for that office. All right, turning to local news for the city area. From the inside of the paper, headline, City High Schools Hold Commencement. The public high school commencement exercises held Saturday in Sioux City dispensed with most traditions. There was no handing out of diplomas nor handshakes. Only a fraction of each high school's graduating class attended, partly because they finished school months ago. Speeches were short, sweet, and to the point. A recording of Pomp and Circumstance played quite briefly. and everyone from the graduates to their family members to Sioux City Community School District administrators wore face masks. These programming changes were the result of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. North High School held its commencement ceremony Saturday morning, followed by West High School in the afternoon and East in the evening. The ceremonies were not open to the public, with each graduate permitted to bring only 4 guests. Auditorium seating was partly taped off to facilitate social distancing among the handful of guests. At each school, the students were brought on stage in groups of 10 for a 10-minute commencement, one group after the next. The ceremony stood in stark contrast to the Bishop Helan High School commencement last month, which featured the usual long speeches and no face masks. The Helan graduation, however, was held outdoors. The risk of spreading the coronavirus is believed to be lower outdoors than it is inside. The graduations at North, West, and East high schools were all held inside auditoriums. Superintendent Paul Gaussman estimated that only a minority of each school's graduating class actually took part in the ceremonies. Each of the schools also held a virtual commencement ceremonies back in May. Quote, we're in the range of 25% to 30% of our students are coming in and visiting us through this process, said Gaussman, who noted that some of the students have already moved on with their lives. The seniors' final year in high school ended abruptly in the middle of March, just as the pandemic was taking hold in Iowa. They missed a series of milestones and rites of passage that others got to enjoy. Quote, we didn't really get to say goodbye to this group of seniors. When they left school on March 13th, we had no idea that 2 days later the government would shut down the schools down, Gaussman said. And I'm not critical of that decision, but we didn't know when they left that day that we were really saying goodbye to them for the end of their high school career. West High School senior Derek Cortez said the truncated ceremony wasn't exactly what he'd pictured for his high school graduation, though it was better than nothing at all. Quote, honestly, I didn't like it. It's not what I wanted, you know, Cortez said. It's just something I've been looking forward to my whole life, he added. Graduation ceremonies are as much for the parents as they are for the students, if not more so. Lisa Mosley, whose daughter, Allison Aguilar, graduated from West High School on Saturday's ceremony, said she would have liked a longer ceremony. Quote, it was sad because it was so short. I appreciated them doing something, though. All right, let's try to find some local news that doesn't have much to do with coronavirus. Turning to the inside briefs, headline, driver dies in Sioux City crash. A driver died of injuries sustained in a crash on the Veterans Memorial Bridge early Saturday morning. According to a press release from the Sioux City Police Department, officers were called to the bridge for a report of a single vehicle crash shortly after midnight on Saturday morning. A blue 2015 Chevrolet Equinox, driven by a 26-year-old man, was headed northbound on the bridge when the driver lost control and collided with a concrete barrier on the roadside, causing significant damage to the vehicle. The driver, who has not been identified, was taken by ambulance to Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead from injuries sustained in the crash. A female passenger and a male passenger were transported to Siouxland One Mercy Medical Center. The female sustained serious injuries, while the male sustained non-life-threatening injuries. Next, Soho closes for 2 weeks due to COVID. Soho Kitchen and Bar, a downtown Sioux City eatery, will be closed through roughly the first week of August due to the coronavirus pandemic. According to a Friday afternoon Facebook post, Soho made the decision to close in response to an employee's COVID test and to concerns around limiting the spread of COVID-19. The restaurant will be closed until possibly August 7th, according to the post, which was signed by restaurant owner Julie Shaner, a Sioux City councilwoman, and her employees. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds ordered bars and restaurants to close their doors to on-site sales back on St. Patrick's Day due to the pandemic. She began allowing them to reopen back in May. The Facebook post encouraged patrons to visit other establishments on Lower 4th Street. Soho, which opened in December of 2011, remains a, quote, strong and proud business, according to the post. Next headline, shooting sex suspect arrested in Sioux City. A man wanted on an arrest warrant in connection with a homicide in Norfolk, Nebraska, was arrested in the Morningside neighborhood Friday night. At around 10:30 p.m. Friday, the Sioux City Police Department, along with personnel from the United States Marshal Service, the Iowa State Patrol, and the Woodbury County Sheriff's Department, were notified that a suspect was wanted in connection with the Norfolk shooting was at an apartment complex in the 2600 block of South Ruston Street in Sioux City. Officers executed a search warrant and arrested 28-year-old Deshaun Gleaton of Norfolk without incident, according to a press release from the police department. Gleaton was wanted in connection with the Friday morning shooting of 29-year-old Haley Christensen of Norfolk, who subsequently died. He had been out of prison on bond on suspicion of third-degree domestic assault and first-degree trespassing at the time of the shooting. Christensen was the victim in those cases. Next, turning to state politics, headline, State Party Leaders Analyze Iowa's Close 2020 Races, from Johnston, Iowa. Joni Ernst won Iowa by 8 percentage points in 2014, and Donald Trump won the state by 10 points in 2016. Yet in the re-election bids here, Trump is clinging to a narrow lead and Ernst is trailing, according to the most recent polls. Chalk it up to Iowa's historical purple state voting tendencies, says Jeff Kaufman, chairman of the Iowa Republican Party. Chalk it up to Trump, says Mark Smith, chairman of the Iowa Democratic Party. The two state party chairmen discussed the 2020 Friday elections Friday morning in taping this weekend's episode of Iowa Press on Iowa PBS. The two had varied explanations for why Republicans Ernst and Trump are not currently enjoying the same cushion they did in their elections. Ernst won an open seat U.S. Senate race in 2014 by 8 points, but is trailing Democratic challenger Teresa Greenfield in recent polling on her re-election race. Trump carried the state by 10 points in his route to this 2016 victory, but holds just a slim lead over Democratic former Vice President Joe Biden in recent Iowa polls. Quote, we've always been purple, Kaufman said, referring to Iowa's rich history of voting for both Republicans and Democrats in statewide elections. Quote, I remember after some successes we had in 2014 and 2016, there were national reporters trying everything they could to get me to say that we were red, and I said, we're purple. We are a swing state, and elections here are never going to be taken for granted at any level, and this is going to be another bruising battle. Smith said the 2020 election is a referendum on Trump, and that's why Republicans find themselves in close races in Iowa. Quote, this election is very competitive this year because of the failed policies of Donald Trump, that he came to Iowa 4 years ago, running for president, and promised a lot of things that would be beneficial for Iowans, Smith said. Smith became state party chairman earlier this year after former chairman Troy Price resigned in the wake of the 2020 Iowa caucuses. Iowa Democrats were unable to report official results on caucus night or in the days immediately after because of technological issues with a new app on people's phones that had been created specifically for the caucuses. Due to that confusion and an historically close margin, most media outlets did not declare a winner of the Democratic caucuses. Pete Buttigieg edged Bernie Sanders for most of the state delegate equivalents, according to the state's party's official results. But there remained enough disputed results that would change the razor-thin outcome. Iowa Democrats pledged to conduct an internal investigation into what went wrong with their caucuses and the reporting app. Smith said Friday that investigation is taking place and a report should be issued within the next few weeks. Quote, that investigation is still in process and we're still looking at that, Smith said. We're continuing and we'll have a report here in the coming weeks. The report will be an analysis of what went wrong and a result of what went wrong, and we will then be looking at what changes we need to make in the process. All right, we're about halfway done, so we will now turn to the obituaries for Sunday. First is Martin P. McCowan of Albertsville, Minnesota, formerly of Sioux City. Martin Paul McCowan, 64, of Albertsville, passed away peacefully at home on July 18th. Memorial services will be 10 a.m. Tuesday at Westbridge Church at 11600 Frankfort Parkway in St. Michael, Minnesota. Visitation will be 9 a.m. until service time at the church. Arrangements under the direction of Peterson Chapel in St. Michael. A live stream of the service will be available on Facebook. Marty was born in St. Louis Park, Minnesota on September 28, 1955. Marty graduated from Montevideo High School in 1974. He hired on with the Milwaukee Railroad 2 weeks later after his father handed him a job application saying, quote, fill it out. In 1978, he transferred to BNSF Railroad, moving to Wilmar, Minnesota. He married Sandra Cavani in Montevideo on June 23rd in 1979. In 1980, he moved his young family to Sioux City for consistent work with BNSF. They then moved again to Albertsville in 2010, where he transferred to the Fridley Hub. In 2012, he started working on the North Star commuter train, where he enjoyed interacting with daily commuters. Marty and his wife were in extended negotiations on when the retirement date would be at the time of his death. A natural athlete, Marty spent many hours riding his 10-speed bike the week before he died, amassing 145 miles. He was active in his church, volunteering with the Royal Rangers program for 20 years, as well as teaching adult Sunday school classes and co-teaching pre-marriage classes with his wife. Marty was also renowned for his skilled popcorn making skills. His grandchildren lovingly called it Papa Corn. Marty was a fun-loving guy who frequently found ways to look on the bright side and especially enjoyed pulling a few legs. His quick wit combined with always willing hands made him a team player everyone wanted on their side. The day he died, it became clear God wanted Marty on his side. Next, Linda K. Kielkin of Sibley, Iowa, 64, died Friday, July 24th. A private celebration of life will be held on July 27th at United Methodist Church in Lamars, Iowa. Graveside service with friends invited July 27th at 11:30 a.m. That's tomorrow, at the Memorial Cemetery in Lamars, Maurer Johnson Funeral Home of Lamars. Next, Cheryl L. Knudsen of Ida Grove, Iowa, 73, died Friday, July 24th. Services will be the 28th at 10:30 a.m. at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Ida Grove. Burial will be at Morgan Township Cemetery in Schweizig, Iowa. Visitation will be July 27th, 5 to 8 p.m. Christian Van Holden Funeral Home in Ida Grove. Due to COVID-19, masks and social distancing requirements do apply. Next, Irving F. Jensen Jr. of Sioux City, 88, passed away on July 22nd at his home. Services will be 1 p.m. Monday at Sioux City Orpheum Theater. Mandatory masks requirement. Masks will be available at the door if needed. Virtual service online via orpheumlive.com. There will be a private family burial service. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Morningside Colonial Chapel. Irving was born on March 19, 1932 in Sioux City to Elizabeth Mary McFarland and Irving Frederick Jensen. His family members were longtime residents of Sioux City. His father and grandfather were associated with the Jensen Craig Construction Companies, as well as Irving F. Jensen Company and many affiliated companies. Irving attended Bryant Elementary, North Junior High, and graduated from Central High School in January of 1950. He attended the University of Nebraska for one semester and then finished his schooling by attending Yale University and graduated with a B.S. in Industrial Engineering in 1954. He was a member of the Phi Gamma Delta Social Fraternity. Irving was a member of the ROTC and became a second lieutenant in the U.S. Air Force, assigned to Lackland Air Force Base in June 1954 until November 14, 1956. He was a captain in the U.S. Air Force Reserves. He resigned his commission in 1965. He married Carolyn Tigger Beckins at the Beckins home on 23rd Street in Sioux City on November 1, 1954. They have four daughters, Miss Mia Elizabeth, Juliana Sue, Carolyn Beckins, Nancy Jane, and one son, Irving Frederick III. He was proud of his children's successes and the grandchildren they raised. Irving was employed at Jensen and Craig from November 1956 until the beginning of 1958. He was employed by Irving F. Jensen Partnership for 1 year. Irving was employed by Irving F. Jensen Company from 1959 until 2006, when the company was sold to Knife River Corporation. The successes of the company were due to the close working relationship with the management team, which consisted of Irving Jensen Jr., Colin Jensen, Eric Jensen, and Byron Brewer. Mark Jensen and his overseeing of Enviro Energy in Minnesota was also part of the business success. Irving also shared a close relationship with his nephew, Cesarus Jensen, whom he mentored all his life. Irving was still involved with both Knife River and Jebro until the end, sharing many years of experience, wisdom, and ideas. Irving was a member of the Iowa AGC and the National AGC. He served on the Highway Committee for both the Iowa and the National AGC, was a member of Young President's Organization for 10 years, and was president and served on the board for many years of the Iowa Concrete Paving Association. He served on the board and was president of the National Concrete Paving Association, located in Chicago, Illinois. Irving was an active volunteer and board member of the Sioux City Chamber of Commerce, president of the board of Morningside College, board member of St. Luke's Hospital, board member of Marion Health Center, on the athletic committee of Morningside College, board member of the Sioux City Public Museum, board member of the Event Facilities Advisory Board, president and board member of the Sioux City Orpheum Theater, as well as giving a significant amount of time, money, and wisdom to the restoration of the Orpheum Theater. In addition, he was a board member of Toy National Bank, taught Public Works Employees Management courses on the Class Council of Yale Class of 1954, and heavily involved in the Yale football program. He was a member of the Yale University and of Timothy Dwight College football teams, and owner of the Timothy Dwight College snack bar. This was just the start of his life of management. He was a lifetime member of Our Savior's Lutheran Church, where he was a board member and served as an usher until the closure of the church. He then became a member of First Presbyterian Church. Irving enjoyed trips to Arizona and California in the winter time with Tigger. In addition, they both enjoyed they both enjoyed the antique and classic automobile car meets and caravans. He was able to go to Europe through the United States government and the Federal Highway Administration to learn new techniques in highway building led by the Secretary of Transportation. The delegation consists of 6 paving contractors and 6 directors of the DOTS. It was an experience that he never forgot. Irving enjoyed Lake Okoboji from July 1933 until his very last days. It is one of his favorite places. He most loved and enjoyed times were those spent with his wife and family. Next, Mary A. Kniefel of South Sioux City, 89, passed away peacefully on July 24th. A celebration of life will be held at a future date. Mary was born on August 30th, 1930, to Paul R. Beacom and Kathleen K. Beacom. Miss Kniefel is survived by her children, Deborah S. Roger Seek, and many others. Next, Catherine Mae Johnson of Sioux City, 76, died Friday, July 24th. Myers Brothers Colonial Chapel is arranging. Next, Evelyn Mitchell. Evelyn Mitchell of Sioux City, 94, died Wednesday, July 22nd. Service will be July 29th, 10 a.m. at Chrissy Smith Funeral Homes in Morningside Chapel. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be July 29th, 1 hour prior to the service. Next, Dennis G. Robinson of Sioux City, 72, died Friday, July 24th. Memorial service will be July 30th at 10:30 a.m. at Chrissy Smith Funeral Homes, Morningside. Visitation will be July 29th, 4 to 8 p.m. at the funeral home. Next, Dorothy Ann Boston of Sioux City, 78, died on January 27th this year at a local care facility. Memorial services will be 11 a.m. Friday, July 31st at Chrissy Smith Morningside Chapel, with internment following at Grayson Park Cemetery. Visitation with the family present will be 1 hour prior to the service. Dorothy was born in Sioux City on March 1, 1941, the daughter of Arthur Burdett and Dorothy Jean Griffin Brown. She attended and graduated from Bronson High School. She grew up in Bronson and spent her retirement years in Sioux City. Dorothy, who went by Anne in her early years, worked for the phone company as an operator and clerk. After retirement, she enjoyed various part-time jobs, including Four Seasons Health Club and Chrissy Smith Funeral Homes. She spent many hours volunteering for Rivercade and Goodwill Industries. She was happiest when she was spending time with her friends and families or helping other people. From Afghans to washcloths or scrubbies, if she could make something with her time and talent, she shared indiscriminately. She will be missed for her companionship, friendship, compassion, and community involvement. She had been a member of Elliott Creek Presbyterian Church as well as Bethel Baptist Church, where she was active in Awana for many years. Aldine Gertz of Omaha, formerly of Sioux City, 67, passed away on June 25th, surrounded by his children. A celebration of life will be held in the spring. Aldine was born on January 9th, 1953, and grew up in Holstein, Iowa. He's the second child of Galen and Iona Gertz. He moved to Sioux City and graduated from East High School in 1971. He was married to Diane Johnson from 1972 to 1992, and together they had three children, Stacy, Chrissy, and Anthony. Aldean joined the U.S. Air Force in 1972 and served our country for 28 years with the 185th National Guard. He was able to enjoy retirement in 2010. Aldean lived in Whiting, Iowa from 2005 to 2015 while married to Mary Lou Bellis. In 2015, he moved to Omaha to be closer to his son. Next, Stephen Craig Ashley of Sioux City. Mr. Ashley, 57, passed away suddenly on Thursday, July 23rd. Visitation will be 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, with graveside service to follow at 2:30 p.m. at Oak Hill Cemetery in Anthon, Iowa. Online condolences may be offered to www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. Stephen was born on April 22, 1963, in Sioux City, to William F. Bill and Betty J. Burrow Ashley. He received his education in Mapleton, Iowa, graduating with the class of 1983 from Maple Valley High School. Stephen furthers his education at Western Iowa Tech in Sioux City, where he studied horticulture. Stephen was an avid outdoorsman, loving fishing, camping, and gardening. He was a Boy Scout growing up and continued as a Boy Scout leader. Stephen has been described as one who'd give you the shirt off his own back and loved helping people, including mowing the grass for the elderly in his neighborhood. Stephen was one of the crew at Nor-Am Cold Storage in Lamar's, Iowa, where he worked in the warehouse. He was a man of faith, enjoying his membership to the Rejoice Community Church in Lamar's. Alrighty, that. And finally, last but not least, Robert Carl Mohan of formerly Sioux City. Robert Bob Carl Mohan, 92, formerly of Sioux City, passed away Wednesday, July 8th at Eventide Shellian Crossings in West Fargo, North Dakota. Arrangements will be private with burial at Memorial Park Cemetery. Online condolences may be made to MeyerBrothersChapels.com. Bob was born the son of James Clarence and Hannah Esser Samuelson Mohan on November 9th, 1927 in Sioux City. He was baptized on December 17, 1927 at Augustana Lutheran Church in Sioux City. He attended Leeds High School until he enlisted in the U.S. Navy in 1945. He served in the Pacific and was honorably discharged August 16, 1946. Following the war, Bob briefly worked for the Chicago and Northern Railroad, but soon joined the Sioux City Fire Department on August 16, 1949. He met Doris Lund at Augustana Lutheran Church, and they were united in marriage on April 20th, 1952 at the church. Together, they raised four sons. In addition to serving in the fire department, Bob also worked as a house painter. He volunteered for the Boy Scouts of America and enjoyed camping with his sons. He was a member of St. John Lutheran Church, Sioux City, where he remained in active worshiping and enjoyed the men's group and property committee. On February 3rd, 1986, Bob retired from the Sioux City Fire Department, having advanced to the rank of captain. In retirement, he enjoyed fishing as often as he could. All right. Well, we got a little extra time left, so I want to turn to the business section, Section E, for kind of an interesting human interest story about one of the Sioux City Journal's pressmen who has been working for 46 years. So the front page of the business section, headline, End of the Run. Subheadline, Journal Pressman Retires After 46 Years. After 46 years of spending his nights in the Sioux City Journal pressroom, Richard Fortune is going to have to adjust to a new sleep schedule. Fortune, 64, will officially retire at the beginning of August. He has already hung up his pressman's uniform since he's currently using up his remaining accumulated paid time off. He's been in the pressroom longer than any of his colleagues. Quote, I've always considered myself the original Pavonian, said Fortune, who grew up on Pavonia Street in a house that is now a parking lot. When 18-year-old Edgar Fortune began working at the Journal on August 21, 1974, the Journal's current headquarters at 515 Pavonia Street had only been in use for a year or two. Most of the press crew had migrated from the old Journal building downtown at the southeast corner of 5th and Douglas Streets. He had taken printing classes in school and liked the process. Quote, I ran my first press in junior high in 8th grade and I loved it, Fortune said. His job at the Journal began as a 4-year apprenticeship. The press that he ran in 8th grade wasn't quite the same as the presses at the Journal, the latter being huge steel behemoths that run off tens of thousands of copies a night. Fortune knows all the pulleys and compensators and slots and pins and rollers of the 14 printing apparatuses in the rear of the journal building. He knows the individual temperaments and tendencies of each machine. Quote, if Richard called, I knew it was really broke, said Mark Smith, the journal's IT and operations director, who wears many hats and acts as chief technical troubleshooter. At night, during the printing process, Fortune would examine sample copies with a lens, somewhat like a jeweler's lope, if you will, to see if the colors in the photo lined up properly. He can spot very small color deviations on the page and knows by feel just how to adjust the machinery for the right color adjustment. See how the red sticking out sideways, Fortune said Thursday, pointing out a very slight red ink misalignment on a front page photo, which he found with the lens. He's also very good at making the paper hats press workers wear. Quote, if you went through your four-year apprenticeship and you didn't know how to make a hat, you didn't get a job, Fortune said. The journal has changed its printing process somewhat since Fortune began his career, from the old manual paste-up technique to today's digital direct-to-plate machinery. The old presses themselves are still the same as they were then. In the 1970s, the newspaper used color sparingly. Printing in color is more labor-intensive and costly. Now color is used on all but some of the inside pages. You quote, usually it was black and red. Holidays, you would have what we call a four-color process color on the front, Fortune said. The papers are narrower and skinnier now than were they when Fortune began his internship, and the number of copies and editions are fewer. There has been some improvement. The ink used by presses today is thicker than the ink used in the past. The thinner ink is used in the old days had a habit of forming a haze of ink particles in the press room that lingered in the air, which was not good for the workers to breathe in. Quote, most old pressmen, back years and years ago, most of the pressmen died of black lung disease, like a coal miner did, Fortune said. Fortune has worked at the Journal longer than any newsroom employees, and he knows relatively few of the current staffers, having seen their names only in print. But newsroom employees and press workers do connect impersonally through the deadline. If a reporter or an editor missed the deadline for a copy or a page, the presses are temporarily idled. Making a practice of breaking deadlines creates problems for the press workers and can delay truck drivers. Quote, you run a lot faster than you'd want to or should in the press room if deadlines are broken in the front office, Fortune said. And let's finish out with the horoscopes and as we close our time together. So for Sunday, July 26th, the horoscopes for everyone, I guess, says, get back to basics, practice moderation, use discipline, and fine-tune your life to boost your emotional, financial, and physical well-being. Don't feel that you must keep up with anyone. Your only competition is you. Once you recognize what's essential, doors will open and success will be yours. Leo, do what makes you happy. Put a smile on someone's face. What you have to offer will make you feel good about who you are and what you achieve. Romance is present. Virgo, listen to what someone has to say, but don't believe everything you hear. Don't let your emotions mess with your intelligence. Recognize when someone is taking advantage of you. Libra, tempers will mount. Take a step back and consider the effects an argument will have on a relationship. Look for a peaceful solution. A physical outlet will ease stress. Scorpio, research something that interests you. What you discover will lead you closer to a lifestyle that offers peace of mind. Learn as much as possible and map out your dreams. Sagittarius, plan a fun-filled day. A physical challenge will motivate you to designate more time for fitness, health, and that special someone. Romance is in the stars. Capricorn, concentrate on domestic matters. Make changes that bring you closer to your loved ones. Share your wisdom and learn from others. Aquarius, let experience be your guide when dealing with personal matters and important relationships. Recognize if something isn't right and make changes to counter negativity and bad influences. Choose love over discord. Pisces, deception is apparent. Don't believe unverified information. When in doubt, go directly to the source. Talk matters through to find solutions. Don't let outsiders interfere in your personal life. Aries, keeping busy will ward off anxiety and the possibility of getting into a senseless fight. Don't overreact when something doesn't go your way. Find a physical outlet to ease stress. Taurus, delve into something you enjoy doing. Avoid a clash with someone close to you. Go on a learning spree that will open your mind and clear your head. Gemini, if you want something, go after it wholeheartedly. Maintaining a jovial attitude, showing interest in what others do, and making a personal adjustments that boost your ego or encourage. Focus on romance. Finally, Cancer. Look for unusual ways to improve your home environment. Invest some more time and money into something that will make your life easier. Don't let someone younger or older bring you down. Alrighty. Let's now conclude our time here with Dear Abby. Alright, I always like reading these. Top of her column, choice of baby's names could be a reminder of family sorrow. Dear Abby, my wife and I are expecting our second child. We are facing a moral decision based on choosing his name. My wife's cousin sadly had a late-term miscarriage 2 years ago. The name they are going to give their baby is coincidentally the same first and middle name that we have chosen for our child. We have wanted this combination of first and middle names for years, well before her cousin had her misfortune. In our case, the middle name is in honor of my wife's father. The first name is just one we have always liked, and frankly, we cannot think of any other names we like more. Is it immoral or even unkind to name our child the same as her cousin's child? Should we consider a different name to avoid causing them pain? Signed, Respectful in Hawaii. Dear Respectful, please try harder to find a different first name for your baby. Although it would not be immoral to give your little one the same name as his cousin's stillborn baby, if this woman interacts with you at all, it will cause her pain. Even though no one, quote, owns a name, to use these two would be extremely insensitive. Dear Abby, I shared some information with my grandson about his mother that I shouldn't have. He repeated it to her during an argument, and now she's very angry with me. I apologize, but it has not been acknowledged or accepted. Our relationship has always been tenuous, and frankly, it's not a big deal for me. She will get over it, but she's enjoying holding it over my head and being the victim. They're moving into a beautiful house this weekend. My son told me that he can't wait for me to see it and ensure it won't be long before I'm allowed to come out and visit. What would you do? I'm thinking of buying an olive tree. They're in style, and it would be my way of extending an olive branch. I will take it over when I know my son is there. Good idea? Signed, Big Mouth in Oklahoma. Dear Big Mouth, it's cute, but an olive branch and another sincere apology might be less expensive and go over better. It might even last longer than a tree in her brand new yard that reminds her of something unpleasant. Finally, Dear Abby, I have a miniature dachshund, Snoopy, which I take on walks in the neighborhood. I am very good about picking up any deposits that he makes. One neighbor has asked that I not allow him to use her yard for either number one or number two while on his walks. Is this unreasonable or, more to the point, practical? Anyone who's ever had a dog knows that stopping a dog and picking him up the second he lifts his leg or squats will be quite often result in disaster. Again, I'm very good about picking up his deposits and have never left anything in her yard. What say you? Signed, Responsible Pet Guardian. Dear Guardian, dogs do not urinate just to relieve themselves. They also do it to leave messages for other dogs. Snoopy would have less of an urge to go in that woman's yard if other dogs had not already signed in. I feel for that poor homeowner because if enough dogs use the lawn as a post office, they could destroy it. Also, when dogs defecate, traces can be left behind, which make it very unpleasant for those who take care of the landscaping. Please try to do as she has requested. P.S. If the homeowner had written me about this, I would advise her to fence her property if it is allowed by the homeowners association.
So that should bring us near the end of our broadcast. Again, just a quick recap of the weather. Looking at high of 85, showers and a heavier thunderstorm, perhaps later through tonight. This afternoon will be cooler, a thunderstorm in spots early, low of 61. Monday, high of 85, low of 62, be mostly sunny and nice. Tuesday, looking at a high of 86, low of 66, kind of same weather, partly sunny, nice in the afternoon. Wednesday, it'll be sun through high clouds, looking at a high of 85, low of 65, and finally, Thursday, low of 82, high of 61. Well, that brings us to the end of reading for the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, July 26, 2020. Your reader has been Trevor. I hope you've enjoyed being with me as we read the paper. I hope you have a good day and stay safe. Bye-bye. Till next week.